everyone, this is Tim. Welcome to North and South Podcasts. It's a real honour this week to have Louis on board. And Louis is going to be talking about his experiences with ADHD. Obviously, neurodiversity, they say, whoever they are, that up to 40% of people might be affected by neurodiversity. I think certainly when I was young, you had people with severe autism. And everyone else is supposed to be normal in rabbit ear marks there. But I think that we've really come a long way in acknowledging that there is a spectrum, and that neurodiversity affects everyone directly and indirectly, and there are certainly different grades of it. I think I've got aspects of neurodiversity. I'm currently on a waiting list for ADHD assessment. I think it makes sense to me. I found out, a friend of mine said he did an online test for ADHD and said, I'm not bothered, but it just makes sense. So I did it and I thought, goodness gracious, that's interesting. And then I started listening to the Adult ADHD UK podcast, which I don't know if you've heard, Louis, is really, really good. And basically, they have said things which I have experienced, and I thought, oh my goodness, that's me. Now, I'm still awaiting diagnosis, but, you know, I've had a few issues with my mental well-being throughout my life, which I think I can attribute to ADHD. So, Louis, that's my little spiel and intro just for people who maybe aren't as well versed in neurodiversity and ADHD. You have been diagnosed technically with ADHD. Do you want to tell us how that happened and how it all kind of started for you? And welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here. So for me, it sort of started where my mom went through a diagnosis. So I was probably about 2 years ago, I think it was, and she was going through different things that she's experienced and was going through the university way of doing it. And she went to me like, you know, a lot of these things that I'm putting down, that's you to a T kind of thing. And I started researching it like yourself. I did an online test and things like that on there. And I was like, wow, like most of this is me. I think it was just this like crazy self, like kind of affirmation being like, oh yeah, these actually all kind of link to me. So I originally went through the university and said to them, like the wellbeing team, like, oh, I want to try and get some kind of diagnosis with ADHD. And this was in my master's. So, you know, this is like quite far on into my educational path, and for me to finally realize these things. And I had a meeting with an educational psychologist that gave me an educational diagnosis, and they score you out of 120, I think it is. And I went through the tests and I was like, I don't really know what I'm doing. It was all like cognitive things. It was like remembering number combinations, things like that. And I thought I've done brilliantly in some of these. And the ones I thought I did the best in, I did the worst in. And then I did all the questions and got to the end of the the test things. She was like, oh, how do you think it went? And I was like, okay, yeah, not too bad. And she went, yeah, you're very severely ADHD. And it came back as my teetotal score was 100 out of 120. So I missed out on 20 marks somewhere. But and then now I'm also, like yourself, going through the medical route, looking at basically trying to go forward with that. I've filled out all the forms with Psychiatry UK, so now it's just the process of going through it, having meetings, things like that, and seeing where we go. But that's kind of where I'm currently at now, awaiting that, the same as yourself. But yeah,
brilliant. And I did a podcast with Claire Berry. I would urge people not to go online and diagnose themselves based on like one article or whatever. You do need to be like careful what you do, because you can read all kinds online and you need to be very, very careful. But I think when I was, even 20 years ago, like ADHD was a bit of a stigma, wasn't it? Oh God, that person's got ADHD. I think now it's probably a little bit more accepted for people to say, I've got ADHD, and for other people to go, all right, okay. And to treat them as normal, if you like. And I think that that's positive. That obviously there are other neurodivergent conditions, Tourette's, autism, autistic spectrum disorder, although people don't like to say disorder anymore. And there's other things, dyspraxia, dyslexia, things like that. However, I mean, for ADHD, I would say that some of the key symptoms for me are emotional regulation. When other people are talking, I just switch off. My mind just goes other places. And I think that the inability of me to make executive function or to operate with the executive function to make decisions when there's a few things to make decisions about, I really, really struggle to the point where I need to just have, if it's not in front of me, that one task, I forget things. The emotional regulation, I think that when I get upset, I get quite upset and I am better than I was. But things like little things will happen and it just absolutely tears me up. But you do need to be careful because these are the kind of things that a lot of people get without necessarily being ADHD. So you just need to be careful really before you diagnose yourself. And if you are interested in it, the attention thing is one thing, but the hyperactivity thing is another. I am quite bouncy and jittery and always moving around, etc. Struggle to sit still. So I think I have got aspects of both. But I would urge people to just do a basic Google search on ADHD to understand it in full. So what kind of things have you experienced then in terms of symptoms or in this journey of self-discovery?
So I think for me, a lot of the main one was inattentiveness. It's that kind of, zoning out and not really being in the room, but being in the room at the same time. I found, I've recently left being a teaching assistant in an educational setting, and I was finding myself zoning out in the classrooms, but also trying to help the kids out. And it was such a difficult thing because they're zoning out and going, "So what have we got to do next?" And I'm like, "I don't know." So
That's faster. That's right, yeah.
I was always just like, I don't actually know. And that's when I think going back into an educational setting, I really realized just how much, but my education would have been hindered by the fact. But a lot of it was inattentiveness. I'm always very, on edge, and I'm always fidgeting and things like that. And I go on to these like random tangents of things. It's quite difficult for me to like focus on one task. Like I can maybe do one task for a bit, and then I'll have to go do something else. And one thing that I found really crazy was that with my friendships and my family and stuff, if I don't speak to them, they're not really there until they're like physically in front of me. Or like I'll miss like my mom's text for like 3 weeks, and I'll look through my text and go, "Oh, I haven't replied to mom for 3 weeks." And she's asked me like, "Did they get home safe or something?" And obviously she presumed I did in the end, but it's things like that. And that was what was quite eye-opening, was when my mom was speaking about them. And it was really funny actually, because I had to use her as my like witness of ADHD through my life for the Psychiatry UK forms. So they have to have someone there to kind of be like, "Yeah, I've seen these, these different things." And some of the examples that my mom came up with were so hilarious in a way, and also quite scary at the same point. There was like one day I decided to start cooking on a gas oven, totally forgot that I left the gas on and left it on all night. And, it all like running a bath, and then I'll end up doing something in my bedroom, and then I'll come back and the bath's like that much full until the top. And I'm like, I've totally forgotten even running a bath because it's not in my mind at the present moment kind of thing. So yeah, and I think especially with emotions, I feel like I've always been someone that's had my emotions on my shoulder. And I feel like I, in a way, find it difficult sometimes if something, so like criticism is a very big one for me. If criticism isn't presented in a way like positively, then I take that really on board, and that can like eat me up for quite a few days. That I feel like I feel like let people down in that sense. And also going into things with like 120% everything, and then I realize like later on down the line, I'm like, it's actually really breaking my mental health itself, like making me feel worse. But because I go into it full ball, I'm like, yeah, I love it. Everything's amazing. And then I realized by about a couple of months, I'm like, yeah, this is actually really difficult to try and maintain. And I can't keep up that kind of like image that I present to people. But yeah, that's a couple of the things that I'd say that are quite interesting. What I've learned about myself from sort of getting that educational diagnosis and kind of putting the dots together and realizing things and things like that.
Yeah, no, I can relate to pretty much all of that. And I remember at school, I was a good student. I think a bit like yourself, I think that a lot of people who are neurodivergent, even with ADHD, which is an attention deficit, we can do quite well at school. But I remember, like, if there was a task where the teacher would give like 4 or 5 instructions and then say, right, get started. And I'd be like, I remember saying to like the student next to me, what do we have to do again? Whereas if the teacher gave us one thing to do, I'd look at the board and go, right, I'm on this, and just did it. And if I was working by myself using the textbook, I was fine. But it was the listening part of things which I really struggled with. But I mean, I did really well through the education system, and I've always done well in academic studies, etc. But it's interesting, isn't it? Because people think, oh no, you can't have ADHD because you're doing quite well. But I mean, I would urge people to do a basic Google search. Be careful what you look at online. But the Adult ADHD podcast, that thing about like criticism, do you call it, is it RSA, sorry, or RAD, where you really don't take criticism well? I think that's a big part of it. And I think also that 120%, and my early teaching career, I don't think I did myself any good with the way I ploughed into it. And like, if one little thing went wrong, it was like, oh, that's not good enough, kind of ridiculous perfectionist, pursuit of perfectionism. And I think that's a big part of it as well. But it is multi-layered and multifaceted. And there's a perception that like poorly behaved lads who are really naughty and can't sit in the chair, that they're the ones with ADHD. But we know a lot of girls mask it, and often it's down to parents and just serendipity, maybe particular teaching staff, that you might be told that you might have it, or there might be a diagnosis. And schools are really underfunded, and getting proper tests done, etc., can be difficult too. So, it's a whole minefield, isn't it? But I do think it's a lot better than it was. And I do feel better knowing that I'm not completely crazy. Although I am completely crazy,
Well,
it's kind of nice knowing, there's kind of a term to explain it. And it's not just you who's, I
totally.
don't swear on this podcast, but I feel like swearing. It's not just you who's completely crazy. Do you know what I mean? That does help me think, okay, I know what my strengths and weaknesses are, and I'm okay with them. I'm okay with that. I do get anxious at times over silly little things, but I can actually say now, that's that. And that helps me too. So there are tools which you can use. So it sounds like you did really well at school too. Would you say that you had any idea of this before? Obviously, afterwards you look back and go, oh yeah, it kind of makes sense now. But was there anything that came from yourself, or anything that you noted when you were younger, other than this thing that, oh God, is there something wrong with me? Did you have any indication maybe that it might have been ADHD or neurodiversity?
Well, I think the same as yourself with education. When I was a kid, I mean, I was only born in 2000, so it wasn't really that long ago that I was in secondary and primary education. But yet again, it was not really spoken about very much, and there wasn't really that. I didn't know of any support or anything out there. And I always, one of the things was that I always knew that I loved some classes and would just hate others, and I knew that. Like I'd like theatre, I'd love doing drama, anything creative. English was a great one. So, but like science, maths, like yes or no answers, those are new that I just struggled in. I think because it wasn't open to interpretation and things like that, I couldn't really excel in it. So I found that in my education that was something. And I think probably like mental tiredness, especially when it came to exams and things, and realizing that, like, I'd be doing my exams and then I'd be writing stuff down, and then I realize I've got like 10 minutes left and I've only done like two questions. So I think a big one for me was definitely like timing wise and things like that. Like with schedules, I was quite good with schedules. Like I'd always make sure that I was, you know. In fact, what was funny, I was looking at my old report cards. I was back home just last week, and I found like my year 7, 8, 9, and 10 report cards. Like one was exceptional, four was poor, and it was like ones in English and things like that. And then maths was like 3, 4. IT was 3, 4. And then it was like Louis turns up late to class every time. And I'm like, I don't even know how I even did it. Or like French was stuff I didn't like. I just didn't put any effort into it. Which maybe now looking at it with the benefit of hindsight, possibly could have been linked to that. But yeah, I think from working in the school now and seeing what's out there with SEN support and things, it's a lot larger than it was when I was in school. And it's same with yourself with you know, I think with a lot of people with ADHD, especially as kids that are now being diagnosed as adults, because they weren't a naughty in class, or because they weren't like, you know, trying to make disruptions and things like that, they weren't really picked up on. Because I'd say I'm more the inattentive side than the hyperactive side, but I do have hyperactive times. But I think that because I was never, you know, full ball like going wild in class and things like that, I would, you know, if I didn't like the class, I'd probably end up making try and like make everyone laugh and like have a bit of a joke in the class, because that's kind of like I saw as my like escape out of the classroom. I could just kind of have a bit of a laugh and a joke and things like that. And then you realize when working in a school that you're like, oh, these kids that I'm having to tell off, that was literally me like 6 years ago. So possibly that. But yeah, it's I think because I was never someone that was so, you know, like they could possibly tell very straightforward that this is probably somebody with ADHD, it never got seen in school. But you definitely thought that there were some classes and others that I didn't want to do because I didn't want to do them at all. Like it just wasn't interesting to me. But anything research based was really where I excelled.
Yeah, that's interesting. I remember I say this to students now because I did well at maths at school, but I absolutely despised every minute of every lesson of maths. And despise sounds like a big word to use to describe a lesson, but one thing I've noticed with my ADHD is that if I'm not mentally into something, it is extremely difficult for me to get through a period of time or a particular task. And that's not because I don't like, getting my hands dirty. I just find like it's almost like cutting into me. The experience cuts into me. So English at school and writing a story, I loved it. Art, creativity, those kind of things I loved. But as you I've kind of said, there were certain things, certain subjects, particularly maths and science, and I do respect those subjects, and I've taught some of them since then, and I acknowledge how useful they are and how interesting they are to a degree. But for me as a youngster at school, I just found that very, very difficult to get through, even though I was often quite good at them. I just found the experience very, very difficult. Another thing is that if there's a TV show I'm not into, like even if it's out of a courtesy to someone else, I'm watching it where I just say, sorry, I can't watch this. Like it's not, I cannot be in the same room as this show, or I'll get my phone out or do something else. And that's caused tension before, particularly like in closer relationships. And another thing I'd say is in terms of relationships themselves, I've often struggled with the emotions involved in kind of closer relationships too, which I think feeds back to what you said about unless you talk to someone, they're not really in the discussion, but or in your field of consciousness. But that doesn't mean you dislike them. That's
No,
just
no.
almost like a coping mechanism because of what's going on in my head. Do you know what I mean? It's very hard to explain, but I think for me, like, I mean, I've had jobs in the past where I literally every minute I'm just knowing that my mind's just saying this is horrible, and or tasks like decorating or something like that. It just drives me insane. Whereas if I could go out with the dog, or I don't even mind going around the car, like checking the oil on the car and stuff, because I can listen to a podcast while I'm doing it. Do you know what I mean? So for me, it's very difficult to be doing something which I don't consider useful or important or relevant to me. Very, very challenging indeed. And it does impact on your job. I think your relationships, I mean, people with ADHD, ADHD are more likely to be unemployed, have poor mental health, have relationship issues, have addiction issues, which is a big one, and to be, in prison. So there's a lot of statistics to back up how ADHD can have a really adverse effect on your life. And I think it's useful to know that, because then you can go, right, I can factor that in. And I do consider myself very lucky with the upbringing I had, where I was taught to value school and I could read and write from a young age. And that kind of helped me get beyond some of the restrictions that neurodiversity might present. But I feel so much better knowing how I am. Another thing I've had this discussion before is, don't you find labels a bit restrictive? And I go, yeah, they can be, and you shouldn't let them be, but also they can be a source of helping you to understand and to show self-knowledge and go, ah, I'm affected by this.
Yes,
That's
massively.
okay. And I'm going to use that as a platform to build on, rather than as an excuse not to do certain things. That's something that I found very, very helpful indeed. How do you feel about that label then?
I think for me personally, it was an eye-opener. It was like it made it kind of set my life in place, because when I did the educational psychologist meeting, and then I met with the support team at Hope Uni, which where I was at Liverpool, they said like, "Oh, if you, it's up to you now on how you take this. So your educational diagnosis only really works within like university settings, or you can put it as like on like if you're applying for a job for like the diversity things that you've been like that side diagnosed. But if I ever wanted to like." Say if I ever went back into university education, I'd have to get a medical diagnosis to be able to prove to UCAS, so I could get like disability support or something like that, like a laptop with the right kind of like software on it and things like that. So I think for me, it was sort of like a push in the right direction to kind of show me and kind of make me understand me more, kind of thing. And I think. As if you are someone that is thinking, oh, perhaps I have ADHD, or maybe I have some kind of neurodiversity, which I believe a lot of us do, and we're all on a spectrum at some part of it. It just depends on which how far either side is. But you always find with I think with ADHD is quite a difficult one, because so much is coming out about it. So many people are relating to so many different things, because there's so many different avenues and pathways and different things that it affects, that people think they may have like one of the things and go, oh, I must have it. And it's always best to speak to like a GP, or speak to maybe go through an ADHD charity or something like that, and kind of see and get like a secondhand opinion and talk to people about it. And but it is one of those, it's like with online doing online tests and things like you said, you need to be careful with doing it, because you don't want to do it, and then it kind of like that you then end up giving yourself that label, but you don't actually you may not feel like you fit into that box kind of thing. But I think having the label, I kind of just say that I'm neurodivergent. I don't really usually go like, oh, I have ADHD, or because it could also, there's other things as well in the neurodivergent kind of like umbrella. So yeah, I think, I don't know, I think if it gives someone closure and confidence in themselves to have that kind of like label, which I think it did for me, then great. But if you feel like perhaps it's hindering you into one place, and you think, I have to now live like this, or you live your life now because you've got this label, then maybe a label is a hindrance. But I don't know, I think it depends on you as a person. I think for me personally, it helped me, and it allowed me to understand more about myself.
Yeah, they are wise words, what you just said there about the whole thing. And I think Bob Dylan said once, he said, I've never read a history book that like talked about how people feel about things. And I think that the experiences I've had in my life, you know, when you read a good book sometimes, you go, oh yeah, I've done that. You know, it's interesting. And I remember when Facebook started. And like there was a group like I silently want to hit people who walk slowly on the back of the head, and you think, oh yeah, I've thought like that, you know, that kind of stuff. But the Adult ADHD podcast, which I can't recommend more highly, has got two people with like ADHD and one who's got ADHD and autism, and some of the things they've related, I thought, wow, that is exactly how I've experience things, or I've done that, and all of a sudden it makes me feel almost a bit better and go, ah, it doesn't excuse bad behavior or whatever, but I now understand why I might have been more likely to do that or to struggle in those kind of situations or environments, and that's empowerment. And I think that we should, in the pursuit of self-knowledge and self-understanding, it's about empowerment rather than restriction. And I think what you just said there about getting proper advice, not just saying, oh, I do that, like, you know, or my kid, you know, runs a stick along the railings along the streets, you must have autism kind of thing. Obviously, you need to be, I did
I probably did as well, to be honest.
that as well. Yeah. You know, you do need to be careful with these things because you
Absolutely.
don't want them to become self-fulfilling prophecies, which you can very easily become without you even knowing about it. But it's interesting. Have you found just general well-being? Because I've had issues since I was 29 with depression. Before that, I had, I think, issues with OCD and anxiety as young as four. I seem to recall, but as young as four, having panic attacks when I was young. I do feel I have had issues with social anxiety, OCD, general anxiety disorder, and depression from 29. And I'm a lot better now because I understand them more. But I feel like ADHD, there's a lot of comorbidities. And I think that the ADHD mind, those things are more likely. And that's helped me understand that as well and to be okay with that. So although I'm on antidepressants now, and I have to do a lot for my mental health, like exercise, get out, meditate, all this stuff. I eat well, I don't drink alcohol. I feel like I'm kind of grasping the bull by the horns and saying, right, I need to get myself better. But my well-being journey since 29 has been a tricky one. I'm 46 now. How's your well-being been throughout life, and do you think ADHD is connected to that?
I mean, possibly, yeah. I think I know for a fact that definitely emotionally, I've had times where like things have affected me a lot more than maybe it would somebody else, or maybe it's not affected me as much as maybe you'd expect it to. But I've recently been diagnosed with panic disorder through like anxiety and things, and I'm also on medication for that and going to go through therapy. And I think that a lot of it could be down to ADHD and kind of like this, the always like overthinking or the constant ticking of my brain. And with a panic disorder, you know, it's being out in like spaces where like shops and things and getting overstimulated and feeling like everything's like there's a weight, a massive weight on top of me, which causes me to kind of be like, I need to get out, kind of like panics and things like that. And you know, I'm going through the process of that now to try and learn that about myself and how I can, you know, help work with that. And I've always been someone that always feels at home when I'm outside. I've always been someone who's been like nature orientated. My master's was all, you know, done on like ecology. I did all about nature and things like that. And I think that's one thing that I've definitely found is that exercise and nature for me has always been the best for my mental health. When I'm in a, I always feel like if I'm in like a setting that is like a shop or something, I never feel comfortable or things like that. So I feel like that's something that I'm learning about myself. But I'm knowing now to try and work to my strengths and work towards the fact that, you know, I can be more myself and comfortable in a setting that's outside and not restricted into walls kind of thing.
That's interesting that, because I often find workplaces and the room I'm in can have a big impact on me. Like if I'm in an enclosed space, not in a panicky sense, but in terms of just an inspirational kind of thing, exercise in nature, we know that that helps everyone. But I think if you are neurodiverse, I think it's a big bonus. And pursuing that and getting out there in the morning, just going on a walk or whatever, I just think that that is massive. Now, on that note, I'm going to share this in the notes, but you've got your own YouTube channel with a couple of videos. So you've done some
Yes.
quite interesting nature walks, including urban walks that then go into country walks, haven't you? And you've
Yeah.
done a very interesting video on consumerism and its impact on, ecology, etc. And they're things that I've always felt are quite a bit of an affinity to. And I think the people who are neurodiverse and ADHD, I've heard on some of the podcasts I've listened to, that there's a justice sensitivity and a social justice sensitivity to having these conditions. So I will share your channel's details, but would you say they're kind of interests of yours which help you feel better about yourself?
Yeah, definitely. I've always loved the idea. I mean, I did a lot of my end of my bachelor's and start of my master's on applied theatre. So it's social justice theatre kind of thing, like using theatre as a way of education and a way of helping people. So I don't know if you ever had it at school, but you'd have like companies come in and speak about like bullying or, you know. For me, a lot of it was about cyberbullying and things like that. So that was something that I always found very passionate, and that kind of then went into the kind of ideas of nature and how we can use nature as a means of like helping with mental health. And one big thing for me was why I went down the ecology route was because I did a lot of work in prisons, and you know, I went into HMP Walton. And did poetry classes and theatre classes with inmates of the prison, and realised that, you know, there were some aspects of like nature, but a lot of it is these all old Victorian buildings that are, you know, brick walls, and there's not much, you know, creative freedom, which some would say is, you know, that's a good thing because they believe that that's how prisons should be seen. But then I see it as like, you know, it should be a place of rehabilitation, things like that. But there isn't anything there really to allow them to. So I started a whole project idea to create like a green space, like in the prison setting, that the inmates could look after and like write notes on and things like that to try and. But that was sort of, you know, me using what I believe helps me, and maybe possibly thinking that is also very helpful for people. In settings where, you know, there isn't an escape or there isn't that you are confined to one space. I think having greenery in a room or having you know, house plants or things like that can really aid in us in like making a room feel like more welcoming and more inviting than looking quite clinical without that kind of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And I agree with all of that. I think that prisons, the statistics in this country about how people go in and then when they come out, reoffending rates, etc., it's awful. I know there was a lot of criticism because there was a refugee centre with like Disney characters on the wall and someone from the government said, paint over them. We don't want these to be welcome in places. Just cruel, heartless people. But I have watched both of those videos, folks, on consumerism and ecology, and there's a lot of good history in there as well. And the urban walk, city walk, country walk video that you've done as well, Louis, is brilliant. So I would recommend that. And sorry, if I just called you Louis, it's Lewis, isn't it? Oh, Louis.
No, it is Louis.
Yeah, sorry, I had a
It is
moment
Louis,
of,
yeah.
yeah, there you go. But I would recommend you watch both of those folks, and I'll put the links in the video. And I think this is good fertile ground for us to maybe work together in the future on some joint projects, because the way you've edited those videos is really well done. And I think that that's something that we could look at moving forward. But I'll put the link in the show notes so people can see them. We're going to run out in a minute, so I'm going to send you another link if that's okay. And we'll finish off a few other points. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's perfect.
Cheers. Right, have a little break, everyone. Press pause, go to the toilet, and we'll be back in a minute.
Brilliant.
Cheers. Hi everyone, welcome to part two with Louis P, the legend. Just a couple of things in terms of ADHD symptoms. These are just lifted from Google. There is an attention deficit aspect to ADHD and hyperactivity, but you don't necessarily have to have all of those. Some of the key things are short attention span, especially for non-preferred tasks.
Well, that's funny, isn't it?
Hyperactivity, which may be physical, verbal, and or emotional. Impulsivity, which may manifest as recklessness. Fidgeting or restlessness.
Yeah.
Disorganization and difficulty prioritizing tasks.
Yeah.
poor time management and time blindness. Frequent forgetfulness and daydreaming and the appearance of not listening. But you might have a few of them, and a lot of people will have a lot of them all the time. So just make sure that you don't diagnose yourself too quickly and hastily without going through the proper channels, as Louis said earlier. So, Louis, brilliant first half there. And you speak really well. And we were talking before that we might do a podcast with your mum on as well in the future, just to get that perspective, because there's increasing evidence that neurodiversity can be passed on through the family line, which is not something that I think was always that clear in times gone by. But there's more evidence, I think, to suggest that that's the case, particularly with what you might call non-severe neurodiversity, as our understanding of that expand. So where are you up to at the moment, and what are your plans for the future?
So at the moment, I'm kind of looking more at going back into freelance artist work again, with like my profession. And then with the future, I don't know, I have a few different ideas, as someone would do with ADHD, so there's a lot going on. But I have ideas of maybe creating theatre companies that work with more like children in cities and things like that, and also possibly maybe looking at furthering my university education through a PhD, and either I'm not sure what route and avenue to go through, if I go through the theatre side or go through maybe more like the educational side with neurodivergency and SEN, and then probably going to lecturing is an overall goal, which is going to be further down the line, I'm sure, but that's a hope and a goal.
Good. Two of the people on the Adult ADHD UK podcast, they're both professors with PhDs, and they talk about the challenges of doing that with ADHD, and they're both lecturers, which is interesting. And I mean, ADHD, there are people with phenomenal success in the world who were neurodivergent, and it's important to underline that. Just on the acting thing as well, I just wanted to say, you'll be well aware of this, but there's increasing evidence to show that people can relive trauma and difficulty in life and process it far more using drama, which I spoke to someone about not that long ago. But I think wider social justice issues, like the theatre of Bertolt Brecht, etc., where you can literally turn the stage into a piece of social justice. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people say, oh, that's a political dimension to things, but I think it's also just a human dimension to things, isn't it? So I think that's really, really exciting that you've got those ambitions.
Yeah, well, there's a really good philosopher called Augusto Boal.
How do you spell Boal? Sorry.
B-O-A-L.
There you go, folks.
And he was a Brazilian, I believe, that fought for social justice in theatre in Brazil. And he created something called Forum Theatre, which is a type of theatre where you show a project or a production, and then you have the audience participate in it to kind of show like where things have gone, like what would you do differently in these situations, which now, that was in the 60s, but now a lot of theatre for social justice is driven and drives from those kind of theories. And that's something that I think is also, I think theatre is a great way to show creativity and things, but it's also a great way to experience and explore different ideas. And people may not think that they are very theatre based, or, but we all have a creative side, and, you know, and it's something that I think has throughout, you know, government funding and other things getting in the way. COVID, a big one, is that people see this theatre as the elitist, and people who go to do the arts are all kind of like, you know, of high academia or have the possibilities to travel that. But it's not true. I was from a council estate and I had a passion in it and I followed that passion. So, you know, that's another thing, that if you do have a passion in theatre or the arts, then it's not going to waste. You know, everyone needs theatre, everyone needs arts, and everyone needs, you know, media and things like that. So the arts is very important.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And it's something that I've got into, particularly as I've got older, more and more. I mean, I've always been into creativity, but I love going to an art gallery and to the theatre, and I wish I could do it more. Having a young son, it can present problems, but, you know, one day I'd like to take him to the theatre. They often say, don't do the magic of theatre. And there's a feeling I get when I watch a great piece of art or go and see some art. And art's everywhere. You don't have to go far. You know, this kind of elite theory of art is one thing, but that's a very limited scope to it all. I was reading today in the newspaper of a guy who snuck one of his own papers into an art, his own paintings into an art gallery. And he put his little painting above all these classics and was sacked, which I think is a real pity. So good on that man. Yeah. And solidarity, brother, for doing that. But art's everywhere, and bringing it to people, like vulnerable people, as you said, that's part of something that we both are passionate about, I think, helping young people and vulnerable people moving forward, maybe with both our projects. And it's something that North and South that I'm looking to do more, hopefully, in partnership with yourself moving forward.
Yeah. But
that's a separate podcast in itself.
We digress.
Anything else that I haven't mentioned that you might want to mention, Louis? I think you've been so good.
Yeah, no, I don't believe. I think I've pretty much said everything about me and my life and where I'm at now and and things like that. Yeah, and it's been a pleasure being on the podcast. It's been a long time coming.
Yeah. I know what your mum means when it takes you a while to reply to WhatsApps.
I do have the best intentions.
Yeah.
But no, I've had a really lovely time. It's been really nice to speak about, you know, me and also relate to other people about things. I think that's a really big part of speaking about any neurodivergency, you know, is just chatting to your friends, your peers, you know, and just speaking out about things, and then you start slowly realizing things. And it is something that takes time. It's not going to happen overnight. No one's going to be waking up one morning and going, "Whoa, hold on a minute! You know, something's different here." You know, and it is a journey, and it's a path that we're all on. And you know, people listening to this podcast or reading up on things, you know, maybe hopefully see this and have some kind of inspiration or some idea maybe why, like you said earlier, that they aren't just, you know, a crazy person or a wild mad person. There is a thing for it, and you know, there is support, and it is a common thing that, you know, can be helped when speaking about it.
Absolutely. But it was a great chat. It flowed so well, and I think we've gone around the houses there, gone into creativity, art and everything. But do check out Louis's YouTube channel and watch his videos. They're both very informative. And I've got a good feeling me and Louis will be speaking again soon and coming up with some other projects. So, Louis, I'm going to stop the recording now. Thank you very much for your time and enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you.